I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Woo!
Honey.
Can you believe we've done 9 seasons of The Only One in the Room?
Season 9 in the can.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much. We have so enjoyed making these episodes for you.
Yep. And we're going to continue to make more.
Yes, we are. Mm-hmm. Yes, we are. And so now you're going to get to listen to some of the episodes that we have curated, especially for this break between seasons 9 and 10.
Yeah, this month is Pride Month, and right? It's also Father's Day.
Yes. Yeah, and I have to get you a present.
Oh, yeah. Go to voyageac.com.
Right. So, yeah, we're going to have, you're going to hear Travis Coles talking about why all Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to hear about Esera Tuaalo, the only gay NFL player in the room.
Great episode.
What?
How about William Fitzsimmons?
William Fitzsimmons, the only one celebrating the culture of his Black daughter.
Another milestone was Mario Van Peebles.
Mario Van Peebles, the only African-American father and son director in the room.
Mm-hmm. We're also going to drop a special spoken word on Mario's edition.
Yes. Yep. I'm over here snapping already.
Who are you
so
snapping
good.
For over there?
Blue Nile.
Yep.
Yeah. No, it's dope. It's such a dope break. We hope you enjoy it. And then, you know, reconvene when we reconvene for season 10.
Yeah. And thank you guys for being such loyal followers. We continue to grow and we continue to create, don't we, hon?
Yes, we do. Thank you.
Enjoy the show.
I was the only one in the room when I played the NFL that was gay, that I knew of. I said, if you don't learn about other people's culture, how do you expect them to learn about yours and respect yours?
Mm.
You know? And so that's just like, if you don't know, take the time to go and learn somebody else's culture.
Yeah.
Take the time to learn about the LGBTQ, the African-American culture, the Polynesian culture, and stuff like that. Don't just see what you on Google and tell, you know, on the computer.
What if you were known as the NFL player with the voice of an angel? And your reputation for making the ladies swoon was rivaled only by your reputation for making big plays on the football field. Esera Tuaalo, proud Samoan, Hawaii native, Super Bowl winner, and contestant on The Voice, had everything he'd ever dreamed of. A career playing the sport he loved, the ability to support his family, and the respect of his peers and fans. But what would you do if you had a secret, one so devastating that it would not only derail the career that you loved, but could also put a bounty on your head? Would you redouble your efforts to keep your truth hidden, or would you relieve yourself of your burden and tell your story to the world? Hi, I'm Laura Cathcart-Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room. In September 2018, I found myself in an all-too-familiar position. Looking around the room at the other attendees at a famed writer's retreat, I realized that I was the only Black woman in the room. When I wrote about my experience for the Huffington Post, something surprising happened. 24 hours after my piece went live, I had 568 direct messages in my inbox. These were messages from people of all races, ethnicities, creeds, and nationalities who had connected with my piece because they too had felt othered. These are the stories we want to share. This podcast is for anyone who has ever felt alone in a room full of people, which is to say that this podcast is for everyone. You're listening to The Only One in the Room, presented by Lipstick and Vinyl and executively produced by Christina Barcy. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to like and leave us a review of your thoughts on the show. And if you have an Only One in the Room story you'd like to share, you can DM us on Instagram at The Only One in the Room. Enjoy the show. Before we begin today's episode, we want to acknowledge the passing of a brother to an entire city, a father of four, a legend, Los Angeles Laker, Kobe Bryant, died tragically in a helicopter accident, along with his 13-year-old daughter Gigi and nine other passengers. We are mourning and devastated, along with the rest of the world. And so before we begin, we're going to take a 24-second pause to acknowledge the passing of this legend.
All right, we have shout-outs.
Shout-outs.
And we have shout-out music.
Mm-hmm.
Honey, who are we shouting out today?
Well, first of all, I know we've mentioned her before, but I really think we need to give a special Spotlight Dance shout-out to our friend, Arielle Nissenblatt.
Arielle. She has been supporting us from the beginning, huh?
Yep.
Yep, let's make sure I have all this right.
Get it right, hon.
Arielle is the Marketing and Business Development Manager at CastBox FM and the founder of Earbuds Podcast Collective.
Right.
She's also the co-creator of the Outlier Podcast Festival.
Very good, hon.
Thank you.
And yeah, so she and I both sit on their advisory board, along with Christina Barcy, who we call Barcy.
Barcy.
A fabulous executive producer. I'm pretty sure Arielle was a big reason I was asked to join Outliers in the first place.
Oh, right on, yeah.
So a little history. I took a podcasting class at the Writing Pad in 2018 because I didn't know anything about podcasts, so shout out to them. It was a great class. Arielle was in the class, and right away I could see that she was the person I needed to connect with because she knew everything about podcasting, and as it turns out, she knows everyone, too.
And that's how you roll.
Yeah.
That's right. She introduced us to Jay Connor as well.
Right? Mm-hmm. I'll always be grateful for that. But what is really cool about her, even though she's not a podcast host per se, she is so well known in the podcasting space. She seems to have taken a real liking to us, putting us on her CastBox Staff Picks top 10 list for 2019.
Yeah, she really has an eye out for us. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Arielle. So shout out to her and check out CastBox FM next time you're looking for a great podcast. You can follow Arielle on IG and Twitter at Arielle This and That. This and That is spelled out. So it's A-R-I-E-L-L-E. T-H-I-S-A-N-D-T-H-A-T.
You go, honey. Who's next?
Okay, this isn't really a shout-out, but it's more like a do not miss this. Please make sure you listen to Azera Tuwa'alo's episode all the way to the end.
And why is that?
Well, for one, there's a brief, very special performance at the end. I've been playing it on a loop all day, and I tear up every single time I hear it. It literally takes my breath away.
He's amazing. I got goosebumps when I heard him sing. His voice is so good. So, yes. And also, now that we know that it's the Chiefs and the 49ers in the Super Bowl.
Let's go!
Yeah, we want to make sure that you hear about Ezra's third annual Inclusion Pre-Super Bowl Party tomorrow on January 29th in Miami. Even if you aren't able to go, you can donate or buy raffle tickets. They have some really amazing prizes.
They do,
well.
Yeah.
After you hear the episode, you'll understand why it's so important. If you want more info, you can DM us or email us at the only one in the room, or you can go to Asera's website, hateiswrong.com.
Asera, what was your first car?
Wow. my first car was a Volkswagen Squareback.
What?
That was my first car.
What color was it?
It was that sort of kind of beige color.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, beige color. Nice little surf, you know, back in the days I used to.
What year was it? Surf.
Oh, my gosh. It was in 1987.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. 1987. Okay. Yeah.
1987.
Yeah, I was in college. Yeah, Volkswagen Squareback. So.
On the island.
Actually, no, to tell you the truth, I got my first car when I was in college.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, wow. At Oregon State. So,
okay.
Yeah, I'm a beaver.
That's right. That's right. I remember that from your book.
Yeah.
So, hi, I'm Laura Cathcart-Robbins. This is the only one in the room, but I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my producer, boyfriend, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, you can call him Hun, too,
okay.
Is here as well.
Hi, Hun.
Hi, honey.
Hi, sweetie.
So
I'm feeling left out.
You're getting
that in there. Sorry.
You're getting a hun hat for sure.
Yes. Okay. Right? He's such a honeypot.
Absolutely.
Hun, do you happen to know the Canadian national anthem?
The one like, oh, Canada. Actually, that's all I know.
Well, we are definitely going to need to learn the words because Canada loves us. Next to the UK, which I'm attributing completely to our friend Leah and her whole family. We have more downloads and subscribers in Canada than any other country in the U.S.
Wow. So I'll try it again. Oh, Canada, our home and native land.
You better sing, honey.
I did that last year.
You could sing that for us.
Can oh, Canada.
Oh, my God. Jeez.
My home and,
No,
it's
keep
a fun. It's a fun.
Keep going. This is for our Canadian fans. Please.
I was up there in Winnipeg doing an anti-bullying program for one of the schools up there for Morin. And then their local hockey team, the Dragons, had me sing the Canadian national anthem.
So just give us a couple more bars.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to look up the words. I apologize.
Oh, Canada, our home and native land. Just sing that.
Oh, Canada. My home and native land.
Ooh.
What is the other word?
That's all I know.
Yeah. I got goosebumps over here.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. No, but too. Canada, I do a lot of, well, we can talk about this later, but I do a lot of work for We.
That's We Day. That is amazing. And so, Canada, you're welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, that was, wow. So, we would love for you guys in Canada, our Canadian listeners, to please join our new Facebook group and post your favorite episodes there.
Right. Anyone who posts will get a shout out on the show. So please post away. Also, if you're one of our lucky super fans who bought your Only One in the Room t-shirts, hoodies, or Hun hats from our website.
Hun hats.
Post a picture of you and your gear on social media. Make sure you tag us and you'll be eligible for some free exclusive merchandise.
That sounds good, honey. Not as good as Sarah sounded, sounds good. All right, I'm going to introduce our guest. Asera Tuaalo is of Samoan ancestry, born in Honolulu, Hawaii. He grew up on a banana farm in, so help me out with this.
Waimanalo.
Yes. And is the author of the memoir, Alone in the Trenches, My Life as a Gay Man in the NFL. After retiring from the NFL, Tuaalo came out as gay in 2002 on HBO's Real Sports and began a career of advocating for the LGBT community. He has worked with different sports organizations, including the NFL, the Gay and Lesbian Athletics Foundation, to combat homophobia. He's helped reject a homophobic state marriage bill. Wow. So wait, you helped reject a homophobic state marriage bill by testifying before legislature and continues to speak at colleges and corporations about explicit and implicit homophobia. Tualo has been in front of the camera most of his life, from NFL games and music videos to top television programs, for his LGBT advocacy and music performances. He came on my radar when he was a contestant on season 13 of The Voice, which you just heard, and it's so amazing. You were so great on that show. Oh my God.
Thank you so much.
And he currently serves as the executive chef at the Pilgrim House in Provincetown, where he also performs. And lastly, he has twins, Mitchell and Michelle. And were you going to just say something about your performance at the Pilgrim House?
Oh, yeah. No, it's a great opportunity for me to sort of, you know, just to continue my art, I guess. And
yes.
So there is a... This year, I brought out a character.
Yes.
Her name is Polly Lava. Yes. Yeah. I'm doing drag. And it's the last closet, because when I wrote the book, I opened up a bunch of closets, and it was mm-hmm. the most hardest thing I ever did in my life. But having this character, back in when I was like 5 or 6 years old, dressing up in my sister's, you know, clothes and makeup, I used to get beat by my brothers and my cousins for doing that. So I put that, I put it in the closet and tuck it away.
Yeah.
Being in Provincetown, you can sort of kind of be whoever you want to be. And I did a show last year. And then so this year I brought Polly Lava out. And so I have, you know, I redid the songs, How Far I'll Go, and, you know, singing about McDonald's. And
yes.
So it was
yes.
the most funnest thing I've ever done. His funnest? I think that's a word.
Hey,
right?
We're
think,
making
yeah.
it a word right
exactly.
here now.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my, you know, Provincetown. So if you're in Provincetown next year, please come and check me out and, yeah, come eat my food at the Pilgrim House, but also come and check out the show. It's a lot of fun.
That is so cool that you are the executive chef. And
I know, right?
Then you, like, change and you come out as this amazing... You guys have to see this picture. We're going to have to try to put it somewhere because the picture of him as his character is... It just makes you smile as
yeah,
soon as you look at
you
it.
So much.
It's wonderful.
I said, yeah, tell people it's Moana's big sister.
There you go.
her fat sister and stuff that didn't get picked for the movie. So
oh.
But yeah, it's exciting.
I was going to I don't want to spend too much time on your childhood because we're going to talk more about what you're doing now and your experience in the NFL and all of that. But
right. You
were born in July 1968.
Yes.
Just like my honey.
Whoa.
Yes.
51.
Oh. Rocking 51. Our 50s.
Exactly, mm-hmm. right? And 51 and proud.
Yes.
You don't you look young.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you
God.
So much. But yeah.
And your spirit is really young too.
Yeah.
So I think that's the most important thing.
I think so. I think that's what keeps people young is mm-hmm. their spirit and their, you know, their outlook on
and
life.
And good face cream.
Right. Honey. Moisturize, and
a little Vaseline under the eyes. We won't tell all the secrets, though.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're the youngest of 8 children?
I am. I am the youngest and the most handsomest and the
most... Of course.
Cutest and the
of
most...
Course.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
So what I heard in your book or what I read in your book was this kind of... A dual childhood, like part of it was like really magical where there are mangoes and bananas and you're in the fields and you love nature. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh my gosh, yes. There's two sides of the story.
I
tell people, I didn't grow up, my life wasn't like a Moana story. Yeah, it was beautiful. Grew up on a banana farm, the outdoors, going to the beach. You know, my family, I grew up in a very poor family, but it was, you know, growing up in Hawaii, poor is a lot better than anywhere else, I think, in the world. And you know, my dad passed away when I was 10 years old, so my mom did a fantastic job, you know, taking care of 8 of us and making sure that we didn't feel like we were poor or we were lesser than anything. And,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, in Hawaii, there's the beaches, there's, the produce, the mangoes, like you said, the papayas, the nature and everything else. That was, it was incredible growing up in that environment.
And what was the other side of your childhood there?
The other side, growing up in a masculine culture and being gay.
Yeah.
That was and, you know, all the negativity things that you would hear and see, you know, of who you truly were. I think that was sort of, for me, it was the hardest part. And not only that, you know, I explained in the book, I'm an open book, you know, it was this almost, I was a poster child for being molested. And for me, being like 5 or 6 years old, I could never, I don't know, it was just one of those things when my kids were 5 and 6, I couldn't imagine anyone doing anything like that. So, but yeah, it was very hard. It was very dark and a lot of prayer and a lot of, you know, things that I need to do to survive.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. I mean, the way you describe it in the book, specifically with your uncle,
yeah,
it's very sinister. and yeah. very dark, and you were told to keep it an absolute secret.
Well, yeah, and also, you know, when you're young, you don't know anything. Like, you know, and it's one of those things where if that's supposed to be right or not supposed to be wrong, mm-hmm. you know, and I think in the book, I really sort of kind of want to make sure people understand, you know, what I went through and sort of kind of did a little bit more graphic than anything. But I just wanted people to understand that sometimes, you know, they make it like a big game and
right.
a fun thing to do.
Yes.
And then it's one of those things where you don't know if that's right or wrong because no one's telling you. And then when it hurts, that's when then the whole fear thing kicks in and then the whole controlling thing kicks in and him, you know, threatening my life and threatening my family's life and
yes.
stuff. So,
yeah.
So as a little kid, I'm 5, 6, 7 years old. How am I freaking
no.
supposed to, like, take that, right? And so I guess when I was on Oprah,
hey.
You know, it was just one of those things, being able to talk to her about it because she went through the same similar situation.
Yes, she did, yeah.
And it sort of kind of opened my eyes because it's like, you know what, my innocence was stolen from me.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of people.
Yes.
Innocence is stolen from them when they are that young and they're molested.
Right.
You know, because, you know, it's and I always thought it was my fault,
mm-hmm.
right? I thought I did something to provoke that, you know, for him to do that. And in actuality, no, it wasn't. It wasn't my fault. And after sort of listening to her and also seeing, I think she had a segment on it. It
mm-hmm.
was one of those things
yeah.
where it sort of kind of opened my eyes. And made me realize and stuff, it wasn't my fault. I was
right.
a victim of some, you know, if something was stolen from me.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, I mean, she had an entire show where the entire audience was comprised of men who had been molested.
Yeah.
And
yes.
and then she had other people discussing it. So that was a yeah. really powerful, that was a really powerful show. And I'm just thinking that, you know, that is enough to be damaging beyond repair. But what you were also contending with was being, is it Mahu? Is that the pronunciation?
Yeah, Mahu, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, Mahu, Fakalati, Fa'afafine are the terms in Polynesia that is means gay,
mm-hmm.
faggot, queer. And so having to deal also with that in such a masculine community, that was
right.
very difficult. But in one sense, being in our culture, being a Fa'afafine,
mm-hmm.
it's sort of like the American Indian. So being a Fa'afafine is okay as long as they know where you stand. If you dress like a woman, act like a woman, some are even put in high positions as medicine people or anything like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was okay, right? But then when somebody like myself being masculine and a warrior that comes out, that's when there's a problem because now people are starting to question our masculinity and who we are as a culture. Right. So I think that's the whole deal. But yeah, growing up and hearing all those things, those negative things, I remember on the playground when I was a little kid, friends of mine were beating up this other kid, throwing rocks at him and spitting on him and calling him Fa'afafine and, you know, Mahu. And I sort of kind of wondered, what are you guys doing? Like, why are you doing this? And he said, well, he likes he likes hanging out with the girls. He likes playing with his sister's dolls. He likes boys. And so I thought to myself, well, I like doing all those things, you know. And so I think after seeing the hate that they had for him, I didn't understand the word at that point in time when you're young. I just saw how the hate that they showed this kid. That's the day I tell people that I put that child within me in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
The child we have within all of us, I put him in the closet. And I never let it go because every single time I tried to let that child out, there was somebody who would say something negative about being homosexual or anything like that. So I just pushed that kid further and further in the closet.
Yeah.
But yeah, I became an actor and, you know, I had to be bigger and stronger and faster than anyone so no one would throw rocks at me or spit on me or call me a mahu,
yeah.
right? So that's that whole masculinity thing sort of kind of kicked in, which is very sad in a way because then you sort of kind of lose yourself for who you truly are, you know? And that's, for me, it was very hurt a lot.
Yeah. You said in the book that you used to watch the Justice League on TV and
yeah.
that you identified with Wonder Woman,
yeah.
which I love. I did too.
Yeah, Wonder Woman.
I love
Woman.
Wonder Woman. But
yeah.
you also said that it was being gay in your culture was like being a superhero.
Yeah, exactly. Right? I think in any culture, right? No one knowing your true identity
right.
and who you truly are.
Right.
I think that's the thing. I think one of the biggest reasons why I love reading comic books and reading stuff like that, because I could sort of kind of cope a little bit. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I was a superhero. You know, I used to put tinfoil on my wrist and tell my cousins to throw rocks at me and see if I get reflected, or climb a tree and try to jump from limb to limb. So, anyway, it's just, I think it's, I think a lot of the LGBTQ community can relate on that. They can relate about, hiding your true identity, to that time where somebody finds out. Right.
Right. And then you live in fear of that time.
And you live in fear of that time. Right. And it's always like kind of thought about it. So why, being a superhero, why would you have to hide your identity? Right. I mean, it's just one of those things where if you're a superhero and people love you, then why would you have to hide your identity? But again, it was one of those things that, I felt comfortable with and something that I could go to when I was a little kid and read. Especially growing up in a religious family, that Pentecostal Hallelujah Church.
That's what I wanted to ask you next, because you say that you heard sermons against homosexuality growing up, and that you actually would go somewhere, I forgot, some field, and you would pray to have the curse removed.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
Well, I think, growing up in that whole Pentecostal Assembly of God and hearing the propaganda of all the negativity things of homosexuality, but not just that, about everything else, it was very hard, I think, on a little kid. And walking, I used to go into the banana fields and just drop on my knees and tell God, please take this curse away, this abomination away. And he didn't.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, so going to church in Polynesian church is, we had to memorize 10 verses every time we went, and you couldn't use the shortest one, Jesus wept, or you get slapped in the head. But I came across a verse, and it sort of kind of helped me throughout my whole life and helped me realize and stuff that I'm not a mistake and I'm not a, So it's don't put your trust in the flesh, because the flesh will fail you, but put your trust in God, because He'll never fail you. And who is the flesh? The pastor, the people, your parents, your cousins, everyone, right? So, and that's what I did. I started putting my trust in God. And I always tell people, if you want to see a miracle, you're looking at one, because I should be 6 feet under, right? But there's no one, and I do debates on homosexuality and religion. No one holds up the Bible and says it's a book of destruction and a book of hate and a book of, it's a book of love, compassion, mercy, and grace. And when I go, talk to a lot of college kids, and they're like, well, it's such a negative. Well, have you read the Bible? Because if you haven't read it, read it. Because you can interpret it any way you want. But no one does a book report and just, do a book report of what they heard on the radio or on television, right? You got to read it. So just read it.
For yourself.
Right? For me, where to start? Well, start with Psalms. Psalms is a beautiful book, right? Start there and start, reading. And, so I get a lot of backlash sometimes from the LGBTQ community and from people and stuff because of my faith in God. I mean, I'm not perfect, though. I mean, no one is, right? We all fall short of the glory of God, So long story short, that's what happened. Mm-hmm. And, I'm a Christian, but I'm not, I'm not perfect like anyone else. But I live my life and stuff, try to live my life Christ-like, right? I respect my mom. I love my mom. I love people. I try to help, even when I've lost everything, I still try to help. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. You are a miracle, and how beautiful that as a child you were able to take these things that were being said to you that you felt were against who you were authentically and being able to find something in that to latch onto to kind of pull yourself out of your magic lasso, as it were.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right?
That's another Wonder Woman reference for you guys who don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
So I'm glad you brought up your family because you had a very interesting relationship with your father and you loved him very deeply. And then he died suddenly.
Right.
And that was horrible. And you were really bereft after that.
I was.
And then you were sent to live with your older brother.
Yeah.
I'm skipping to this because it seemed to me this is where you found solace in football when you were living with him. Is that correct?
Yes. It was also a nightmare as well.
Right. No,
we
that's
won't
why
talk
you had...
about that.
Well,
but it was, I found sort of a different way because he was such a football fan and, you know, and so he wanted me to start playing football. So I started playing football and, you know, getting out there and, you know, it didn't really work out the first time. And then until
you
went back.
You were how old then?
Before 13.
Okay.
13, 14. It didn't really work out.
So you're in California now for the first time.
No, actually, no. I was in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Oh, Nevada. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Las
yes.
Vegas, Nevada.
But you're in the States for the first time.
Yeah, for the first.
Or in the States, sorry.
Yeah, no, no. Yeah, exactly.
State? Totally my
the
bad.
50th.
You're on the mainland.
Yeah.
So yeah, so you're in Las Vegas with your brother, and it's kind of a tense home situation.
It's definitely a tense home situation, and you know if people can read the book because it's very hard to like sort of kind of discuss things and stuff, you know. And this has been a long time, so it's one of those things. I wrote the book, and we had a discussion, my brother and I, but still, you know, there's things and stuff that has not been
resolved. Yeah,
but yeah, it was a very dark time in my life, and you know, I'd miss my dad.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I miss his
and
guidance.
Your mom, I
and my
imagine.
Mom, yeah. But it was one of those things where just lost my dad and my mom, she needed some time and stuff sort of kind of to mourn. And, it was just best for me at the young age to go and live with my brother for a little bit. And so, yeah.
And that's, I thought you explained this really well in the book. It's a cultural thing, right? That the oldest, in absent of the father, the oldest takes care of the family.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right?
Becomes the sort of the father figure of the family.
So you're living with him. He's a huge football fan. Things are tense at home.
Yeah.
And you can play.
Yeah.
Like you have this talent.
To tell you the truth, it was sort of not really established there. And I didn't really, I joined the team, but didn't really. So it was one of those things where it didn't start until the second time I came to the mainland, to California, where I started playing football at Don Lugo High School.
Okay.
And that's sort of where I blossomed because I was put in a great environment when I came back the second time.
Yeah.
So the first time, I wasn't. Like, the first time, I was living in fear and getting beat and all of that. So it was one of those things where you can't really focus on something if you don't really you can't focus on something when something horrible is happening to you. So it was really not a good situation in Nevada. And so, I mean, it was very difficult. And so we went back. He went back to Hawaii. My mom wanted him to come back to sort of run the banana farm.
Right.
And things never stopped. An aunt of mine came to visit, and she saw sort of like the situation that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked my mom if she could take me.
Yeah.
And so I basically... I tell people when I escaped, I never looked back. So we didn't even tell anyone that I was going. We just jumped on the plane and I was off to a land that I'd never... And it was difficult leaving my mom, but I needed to get away. I needed the pain to stop.
So in this new place, where was it again?
Chino, California.
Chino, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So you're playing football there.
Right.
Are you good at it there? Do you have a
talent
for it?
Yeah, I think because I had the support, and people... I mean, I didn't have to look over my shoulder as far as, like, anything else. But I remember just going there and just loving it at first, I was good at it. And I remember a kid challenging me on the football field because I was the biggest kid. And I think he felt threatened that I was, I was, like, this big kid coming in. But I never sort of kind of played football, so I was just... okay.
Yeah.
And I just destroyed him on the field. So I ended up taking his position and then also playing both sides, offense and defense. So,
okay.
Yeah. But then we became real good friends after that. So.
Right.
But yeah, I remember him calling me out in front of the whole team. And
so that led you to becoming a Beaver.
Yes.
Yes.
Oregon State Beaver. After playing those 2 years in high school and getting all these awards, it was absolutely amazing. And then being recognized and being a blue chip player around the country, I had the opportunity to go to like Miami, to Michigan, all these other, all these letters that were coming in.
Yeah.
And to tell you the truth, at first I didn't know what these were, because I was like, I grew up in Hawaii. We didn't know scholarships, what? Go to school, what?
But they wanted you.
But
all
they
these
wanted
places
me.
Wanted
yeah.
You. Yeah.
They wanted me. But I had to kind of reverse because after a while, my English teacher, she's really sort of helped me. And throughout everything.
But what was your English teacher's name?
Laura. So,
Laura.
But it was one of those things where she used to correct my English because I spoke that pidgin English coming from Hawaii. And I used to get upset. And then she's like, I asked her, why do you always point me out? Why do you always correct my English? Why do you always do this? And she said, well, because I see potential in you. And then and she told me about the scholarship thing. I'm like, what is a scholarship? Like, we talked to your football coaches and they said you're doing really well and you could do this scholarship, but you need to start. And that's when I started focusing on school. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And also, growing up in the whole, in Hawaii, the special ed, I was pegged as a special ed kid from when I was a little kid.
Oh, and that's
first, second grade. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then so when I went to California, you have to take the test again. And my counselor was like, you don't belong in any of these classes. So they challenged me in California, and they put me in regular classes, and I was able to, graduate with some, algebra and calculus. It was amazing. So
you were working below your potential.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, it's one of those things where you just sort of kind of pass the kid around. Like, go ahead, go to next. You're a problem here. You're going to be another problem. They never really believed in you. So that's why it was pretty cool to go to California and also discover that part of you. So and I got a scholarship and I went to Oregon State University, the Beavers. I chose them. I had I had 5 visits to different colleges, and it was absolutely amazing just to have all of that.
And then so you're now playing college football on a team that gets a lot of TV time.
Actually,
didn't think because it does sometimes, right?
No, the Beavers. We were the doormats of the Pac-10 back then.
Oh,
so we
damn.
Didn't have, yeah. But that's sort of kind of like why I chose them. I went to 5 different visits and it was amazing. But I went to Oregon State because it was like, it was in Corvallis. It was tucked away. There was like 12,000, students. So it was sort of, I felt like I could sort of kind of hide there and play football.
Yeah,
But, when you do well, there's always recognition always comes your way. But yeah, that's why I went to Oregon State. I signed there because it was such a beautiful place. Yeah.
And then, so you have, I have this in my notes, and yeah. I don't know if this is college or the pros, but at some point you have a kiss with your teammate. Was yeah. that in college?
Yeah, college.
Okay, can you tell me about that?
Yeah, that was just the weirdest thing. You know, I never really did anything in college because I was so scared of someone finding out, you know, and then me becoming sort of like the man on campus, you know, and playing. It was just very difficult. But it was a friend of mine. I'm not going to tell you what position or what.
No.
Yeah.
He will not be Googleable.
Yeah,
folks.
He will not be Googleizing.
No Googleizing.
So anyway, I went to go pick up some notes. Some notes. I'm kidding. you know, because I missed a class. And then for some reason, it just happened. Like, it was just happened. Like, it just, the kiss came and I was, felt good, but I was also shocked. And then the fear kicked in that he was going to tell people.
Right.
And so I pulled back and I was like, dude, like, what are you doing? You know?
So you made it seem like it was him.
Him.
Yeah.
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 It made it seem like it was him. So, but, you know, he's married and happily married with kids and stuff like that. But it was just that moment in time where, yeah, I had an amazing kiss by mm-hmm. one of my teammates. So
the other thing I was really struck by was how strategic and hypervigilant you were about guarding the masculine persona that you had created and hoped to protect.
Right.
That you were very conscious, it seemed, and yeah. you can correct me if I'm yeah. wrong, but it seemed like you were very conscious all the time of making sure that you didn't show any inkling of being gay.
Yes.
And you also, the other side of that was you lived in a really intense fear of being found out. Right. And that lasted, I'm talking more, I mean, it definitely came up in college right. in the book, but I'm more in the prose. Specifically, I think when you were a Viking is when I read right. most of it. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, definitely. It was, gosh. It's very difficult, right? Because it was one of those things where when you start doing well and you come from a place like a poor family, and so knowing that you could lose during that time, you could lose everything by someone starting a rumor about you or outing you, right? So all that hard work and sacrifice that you did just to get to that point could be taken away by someone doing that. That was the big fear of all of it. You know, not being able to afford college and having a scholarship full ride and knowing during that time if somebody found out and outed you that you could be taken away, that scholarship could be taken away, right? You could be alienized by so many of your teammates and stuff like that. So, yes, I think when you grow up with nothing, you tend to protect what you have, right? And you don't want that to go away. So, for me, all the negative things that happened in my life growing up, I used all that for fuel for the fire to, like, you know, to get me where I was, getting the scholarship to Oregon State. So, yes, it was hard. Waking up every single morning and walking into that locker room and transforming yourself into somebody you wasn't, like straight guy, right? That's probably the hardest thing. It wasn't about being beat up or about being, you know, all this, because I'm a big dude. I can take care of myself. It was about things like that that could be taken away from you by in a second just by somebody doing something like that. So, yes. I got up every single morning. I looked over my shoulder. I protected who I was, right? As I played college, the more I would play, the more recognition I would get, the more nationally recognizable I would get. And so it was one of those things where you never can trust anyone. And so what you do, you create this whole world of your own and you protect it. And you make sure no one ever finds out about it, right? But then you live in fear and you live in depression and you live in hurt and you live in suicide tendencies and you live with all of that stuff, right? But it's a sacrifice because it's a lot better than the place that you came from. So that's why I protected myself, looking over my shoulder, making sure I said the right things, making sure I went home with the woman, making sure that people saw me go to the strip clubs, making sure that, you know, I went to church, making sure, like, you know, all hiding all of those things is exhausting. But you know what? I don't know.
That's, yeah. thank you for that, because that is a really good peek inside the work it took for you. And I know that you're describing, in a way, another time.
Yeah.
But not entirely another time. I know that there are still a lot of people that are afraid to be who they are for fear that they'll lose. And I'm not just talking about a hyper-masculine sport like football. I'm talking about anything.
No, definitely.
Where people are afraid to be authentic. So for you to just give that, look into how much work it is to be this beautiful person that you are, you know, like this big kid, the easy smile, the humor. And I know that you had to disguise a lot of that in order to present.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely had to do that. But you know what? To tell you the truth, mm-hmm. after a while, just like everything else, it just becomes part of your life.
Right.
You don't realize and stuff that it's so negative and so the things that you do to sacrifice everything until you come out and then you look back and then you're like, holy shit, that was, I had to do all of that just to get this. Like, you know, it's like, you know, it's funny, but, you know, that's part of the LGBTQ community. That's how, you know, a lot of, you know, my brothers and my sisters have to go through. People always realize and stuff, oh, what is the big deal? Well, the big deal is, the big deal, you go throughout your whole life with your family and your friends since your childhood to your, you know, your grown up, and just the fear of knowing that when you tell them the truth, what everybody said you should tell the truth, that you could lose them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fear.
Yeah.
So that's the big deal, because back in those days when I was growing up, being gay was not very popular. It was always the negative thing, right? You would die of AIDS. You would do this. You know, you're weak. You're, you know, you're a sissy. You're a girl. Like, so, I mean, there was no positive images like they do now, you know? They have great positive images on television and on the radio and role models, people coming out. It's never had that back in my days.
No. I have a couple quotes from your book about that. One is, football is a man's sport. Mm-hmm. Married men brag about the girl they just plowed. I couldn't believe the way these guys talked about women. Homophobia peppered the banter. I laughed at the gay jokes to be a part of the conversation. Yeah. I hid my laughter. Inside, I cried.
Right. Right.
And then the other one is, it's a former teammate of yours that said, if the guys found out that another player was gay on a Monday, he wouldn't be able to play on Sunday.
Right.
My teammates would take me out and practice. A gay player would be punished, outcast for life.
I mean, a couple years ago, there was like the whole bounty thing from the NFL with the New Orleans Saints, you know, taking out quarterbacks. How much you think it would be for the gay guy?
Okay, I didn't know about that bounty thing.
Yeah, no. It's the whole bounty thing that teams, like, they would offer, like, money to players to take out a quarterback or to take out somebody. Yeah, it's crazy. So, I mean, how much you think it would be for a gay guy?
Right, right.
You know?
It would happen.
And also, I've dominated so many offensive linemen and people in the NFL. I mean, how many times you think that they would, like, you know, with their teammates teasing them that you got beat up by a fag, by a gay guy? It's like...
Yeah. It would be unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
Yeah.
Right? Unacceptable. But I've done it so many times, you know?
You came out on Real Sports.
Yay!
Yes. Can you tell me about that? Like, what led up to it? What it was like to come out on national television?
So, yeah, my partner at the time, we adopted two kids. And so we were living with our two beautiful children.
They're twins.
Twins, a boy and a girl. And so a friend of mine who was a videographer was like, dude, we could do a documentary on this. Of like, what do you mean? Like, documentary of this and...
Yeah.
You know, but be anonymous and like, no way. Like,
right,
you know, it's
right.
Like, I have two beautiful kids and stuff. Like, I'm not going to like put them out there and stuff. So he went and I said, okay, I talked to my partner at the time and he went to go try to get funding. And so HBO said, I mean, yeah, we won't fund the thing, but we have this show called Real Sports. And so I talked with my partner at the time and then we were having a difficult time raising our kids, you know, in the closet. So I was the dad because they look like me and he was sort of like the uncle or whatever, right? We got so tired of lying to people, even going to pick out schools for them. You know, we had to sort of kind of lie, you know? And so we talked to each other, like, let's do it. Let's come out. And we didn't think it's going to be a big deal. We didn't. We thought, okay, we're going to have the American dream, you know, the house, the white picket fence, the two dogs, the two kids, minus the wife. You know, it's like... But when we came out, it blew up. It was very Gary at the time, and I remember doing the interview. And,
is it Bryant Gumbel?
Yeah, with Bryant Gumbel, mm-hmm. but somebody else did it. Oh, gosh, I'm having a mind block. But he asked me that question on camera, what the secret was, and I couldn't tell him because there was excruciating pain that came through me, and I just couldn't do it. So something that should have just took, you know, a couple hours to film or three, you know, it took all day, and it was, I just couldn't. I puked and had to. But then when I said it for the first time, I came back, you know, from the bathroom, said it for the first time, it felt so amazing just to have that release. Because I think the fear of the unknown, I think that's a lot, you know, for the LGBTQ community and people that are coming out. It's just the fear of the unknown, like we talked about earlier. Who is going to support us? Who we're going to lose? Imagine if straight people had to do that. Had to go through that. Oh, I have to come out as straight. Oh my gosh, I might have to lose my family and friends. You know, so that we came up on ReSports, and it was great. It was a great opportunity, and it was a great feeling. I tell people this whole burden just fell off my shoulder, and you know, I felt light as a feather. But I stepped on the scale, I was still 315 pounds. So, but it was an amazing feeling. Yeah. You know, just to sort of walk out the next day and feel free.
How many people, besides the men that you've been with, mm-hmm. had you told I'm gay to? How many people at that point?
You know, we had our little pocket of...
like a little circle of friends?
Yeah, circle of friends mm-hmm. and family, his family. So we...
You had told your mom?
Yeah, I told my mom, and then all his family knew. And so it was sort of kind of small circle of friends. And so... but it was great, you know. I lost a lot of friends and family, but slowly... they are coming back 10 years later. It's like no skin off my back. You're the one who missed 10 years of our friendship.
Wow.
You know, so I've been living my life, and I've been happy, and I've been, and they see it on Instagram, and they see it on, you know, Facebook of what we're doing, and, you know, they apologize. But still, it was, I lost a lot of friends and family. They're coming back. But it was this great feeling, amazing feeling to be able to walk down the street mm-hmm. with my family, my kids, and everybody know that we were a family. It was one of those things where all my friends that played in the NFL took for granted. That's what I wanted, and I got it. And it was an amazing feeling.
Yeah, so. And you talk about that, going to your teammates' homes, backyard barbecues.
Yeah, exactly.
And getting to, and being invited into their family homes.
Yeah, exactly.
But not being able to reciprocate.
Yeah, and I tell people, that's probably the most hurtful thing. Yeah. Here I am in the NFL, the most highest, and I couldn't share it with anybody.
Right.
So,
right. Well, that's incredibly lonely.
Yeah, it's very lonely.
And isolating,
so, very lonely, isolating, and it was very depressing.
You are the answer to a trivia question.
Yeah.
Which is...
two of them.
Yeah. Oh, two. Okay, so wait. I'm just going to do one of them right now. Yeah. Who is the first NFL player to sing a national anthem and then start in an NFL game?
Yeah, yeah. And I found out from a friend, they were playing Trivia Pursuit at the cabin.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, they call me and they're like, dude, you I know that answer. The guy was like, wait, I know that answer. Yeah, so...
so yeah. You have had this talent for football.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely saved you in so many ways, right?
Yeah, yes.
And brought you to these places that you probably wouldn't have gone on your own.
Exactly.
But now you also have this passion and complete talent, this beautiful voice that you got to showcase in that way on that day.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, which brings you into my life, because then in 2016?
Yeah, 2017, I believe,
On The Voice?
Yeah, on The Voice.
So can you talk about your singing and your singing career and how you kind of juxtapose that with your football career and what means more to you, or do you have to choose?
Well, I have to sort of like thank my mom and my dad. So when I was a little kid, they used to force me to sing in front of all like the guests. And my dad taught me a song called God Bless My Daddy. And so I used to have to sing that to everyone, and even though I was crying at the time, I had to still do it. But, you know, fast forward to college and singing in the locker room and doing a lot of Luther Vandross and a lot of, you know.
I'm going to make you do some Luther.
Yeah, a lot of that. It was funny because one of our trainers, who was a basketball trainer, he goes, you should sing the national anthem for the basketball game. You know, I was like, I thought he was joking. He's like, okay, if you can get me it. And so the next day he comes, you're on for tomorrow. I'm like, what? And
wow.
Yeah, and I had to learn that. And, like, you know, I knew it, but it wasn't like that. So I remember them announcing my name, and people were talking. You know how people talk. And then when they announced my name, it was like you could hear a pin drop. And I think my legs started shaking. Until I blurted out that first note, and then it was smooth sailing. And then from then on, you know, got to sing for a bunch of NBA games and stuff like that. And then when I got drafted to the Green Bay Packers, it was a Thursday night TNT game, a national televised, and they asked me if I wanted to sing. So, and I said, yeah. But I wasn't nervous about singing the national anthem. I was in front of, what, 100,000 people. I was nervous because my idol, Mike Singletary, was playing for the Bears, and we were playing the Bears, and I, like, he was staring right at me when I was singing.
Oh,
my
goodness.
Yeah, I was like, I used to try to play like him when I was a little kid. So,
how cool.
Yeah, that was super cool. And then so he came and gave me a big hug, and I was like, this, wow, you know, and then I started in the game. But I think that's when, you know, I just knew and stuff that, you know, I guess people love my voice.
Yes.
You know, and I think growing up and listening to a bunch of Motown and trying to sing like a big black woman, it's always like, it always helped me because I have this high voice, you know, I have a very high voice. And so I'm a high tenor. But yeah, and that's where the passion came in. And, you know, just been singing all my life and doing, you know, a bunch of galas. And tonight I'm doing a gala with Tammy Brown. It's 20 years of Tammy. She's also, you know, donating some of the proceeds to my my organization, Hate Is Wrong.
Right.
But I'm performing there tonight. But, yeah, and just it's been a great opportunity. And I got a call from, not a call, an email from someone from The Voice. And I thought it was a joke. And then somebody called me.
Oh, they solicited you.
Yeah.
That's
somebody,
so great.
Yeah, somebody called me, and they're like, and I thought it was a joke. I thought a friend of mine was joking. I was like, oh, okay, send me the information. So they offered me a private audition in Chicago. And so I went to Chicago, and before you know it, I was there at the blind auditions singing, and yeah.
What did you sing?
I sang Rise Up, the Andra
Day. Oh, yeah.
Rise Up. Yeah.
You got to get up there for that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, but yeah, I sang Rise Up, and it was pretty cool. It was fun to sing. I did it my own little way and stuff. So,
it's amazing.
But, yeah, but music has always been a part of my life. I think music is a very, it's icebreaker for a lot of things in people's lives, you know. And I think I love making people happy. That's why I love cooking as well, you know, to make people happy, putting a smile on their face. And I think seeing this 6'4", 300-pound Samoan get up there and sing, like, you know, Aretha Franklin or whatever, it's like it's pretty fun to see people's reaction in their face, like when they're doing Andra Day or Adele or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
But
so that's nuts.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I want to talk about your cooking, but first I want to – is Tammy Brown.
Yes.
I have to thank her because she brought you out here.
Yes.
Which allowed us to get you.
Exactly,
Because you don't live in Los Angeles where we record, and so this is a special treat. So thank you, Tammy Brown.
Tammy, I love her.
Tell me about your work as an advocate. Tell me about your organization.
Oh, I have an organization called Hate Is Wrong. So I have to reverse. Because I was living in the closet and because I couldn't say anything when I was, you know, playing football in the NFL, I created this saying, hate in any form is wrong. It was an umbrella for me. So every time I heard something that was sexism, racism, or homophobic, I could say, hey, dude, hate in any form is wrong without outing myself or anything, right? So it sort of kind of stuck with me. And until when I came out, it's still, you know, I would use that going around the country speaking about homophobia and diversity and tolerance and acceptance and inclusion. I would use that. Hating any form is wrong. And so when the Super Bowl was in Minneapolis 3 years ago, I turned that hating any form is wrong into a nonprofit, Hate Is Wrong. And so what we do, and the reason why I did that, because I wanted to make sure that the LGBTQ community had a presence at the Super Bowl. It was my way of sort of bridging the gap between the profession I was in and the people that I love. And not only that, like I said, to have a presence at the Super Bowl. And so we do an inclusion party at the Super Bowl.
That's major.
Yeah, this is our third annual. Mm-hmm. It's going to be in Miami. We're sponsored by Adidas. Adidas is a big, huge sponsor. Tito's is a sponsor as well. You know, the Minnesota Vikings has also sponsored it. Also, the NFL has sponsored the party. And 100% of the ticket sales from the party goes to anti-bullying programs within the state where the Super Bowl is. Oh. So last we donated money in Minneapolis. We donated money in Atlanta. So the money raised next year in Miami will stay in Miami. So we're just a nonprofit that raises money to give money. None of our board members get paid. We just love what we do. It's a volunteer basis. And like, again, it's a way that, you know, the LGBTQ community can have a presence at the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And it's growing every single year. 98 Degrees is, I'm thinking about coming and performing and
That's
being
great.
Our headliner for this year.
Will you sing with them?
I will. Yeah, yes. I do. I perform and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We have a bunch of, I bring DJs, and it's just a big, fun party. And it's fun because we have NFL players, straight and gay, and everybody just meshes and have a fantastic time. And it's a great opportunity for people sort of kind of, if you haven't been in sort of that environment, to come and just see, like, how amazing it is. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's what I do. I go around the country and I speak on homophobia in sports. My agent's Greater Talent Network out of New York City.
Yes.
And they book me around the country. They're amazing. They're, you know, and it's great just to sort of kind of get the word out and educate people. And just show the aloha. So that's the thing. I think I break down so many stereotypes when I go speaking at colleges because they're expecting this different person to come up. And then they see this other person, like this big football player. Crazy because all the athletes in the room, they're wanting to be where I was. So the respect's there, right?
That's so important.
Yeah, very important. And I remember speaking at a university to the athletic department, and at the beginning, people making jokes and, you know, all of that. And by at the end of it, I demanded their respect, and they showed me the respect. People were crying and stuff like that. Because, you know, it's one of those things where, dude, I think the fear with everybody comes out first until
yes.
they sort of settled.
Yeah.
I was able to speak at the combines for the NFL a couple years back. And it was funny because out of 300 top athletes, there was one stupid question.
Which was?
So if you're a fag and I call you a fag, is that offending?
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you it was, but it took all my energy not to go over that table. And you know, I'm kidding.
People don't know you can't use that word.
You know, that was about 10 years ago.
I don't care.
I know. So he thought it was a joke. He thought he was going to get laughs from all his colleagues. He thought, you know, but you know what? The reason why I held my tongue is because I saw around the room and everybody was like, you idiot.
Yeah.
Like you could tell, like,
they were with you.
Kidding
yeah.
me. Like, are you, this is, guy, you're trying to get where he's at. Like, yeah. and you're acting as if, like, you know. So, and then after a lot of athletes, dude, he doesn't represent all of us. So I hope you understand that. Thanks for, you know, so it was great to have that experience.
So it was a good experience.
Very good. And,
yeah.
I said, you know what? Anytime you use the word faggot, queer, homo, or gay, and you use it in a negative term, and I just told him straight out, it's like calling a woman a bitch
mm-hmm.
or calling African-American a nigga.
Mm-hmm.
It's not right.
No.
And so it was like, when I said those words, they're like,
Yeah.
Because it's true, right? I'm not going to sugarcoat anything out there, right? Because I think we do that a lot. We sugarcoat things and stuff. But you have to just go direct. You know, in actuality, a couple years ago, he sent me a message on Facebook apologizing. So
nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, but you know, and that's the thing. Sometimes you change people at that time, but because of the experience you had with them later on in their lives and stuff, they figure it out.
Right. Or they weren't ready then.
They weren't
and
ready.
And they become
then.
Right. But you can still
but
be the
But then you
messenger.
Don't know their environment. You don't know the family that they
yeah.
grew up in. You
right.
don't know the, you know, they might have been religion or might have been homophobic
mm-hmm.
or might have been. So it's one of those things where sometimes when you're that young, you have to just give them some time. Like even
yeah.
when I tell these kids when they come out to their parents and I coach them, I said a lot of the damage is done in that 10 to 20 minutes. Because it's one of those things, sometimes you don't get the answer you want. So it's like, you don't want me, F you, all of this.
Right, so they go off.
They go off. I said, just walk, even if your parents don't accept it, say, you know what, I love you. When you're ready to talk, I'll be here. And walk away.
Yeah.
Because that's right there. And then you don't talk to him because all this stuff was said, you know, all this hateful things. But walk away, because then eventually I'm a parent. And if my kids did that, I would miss them. But I would never do that to my kids, but no. I would miss them. Like, I would, that's my blood. That's my child, right? So sometimes when you put that negative thing and that hate in there, then that's why it takes a little bit longer for them to sort of kind of figure it out.
Sure. Yeah. So you're going around the country and you're speaking, you're being this advocate, and at the same time, you're dividing your time between Minnesota and Provincetown, right?
Yes.
Provincetown, Massachusetts.
Provincetown, Massachusetts. What an amazing place.
And you're at the Pilgrim House.
I am. I'm at the Pilgrim House. I'm doing a show, and then I'm also the executive chef there at the Pilgrim House.
Yes.
So yeah, this is the whole, now the cooking thing comes in, right? So I have been catering for the last probably 20 years. And I donate chef dinners to big galas, to fundraise and stuff. And, you know, my dinners go for probably like 10 grand to 15. So I go to people's homes and I cook for them. And I got that culinary skill from my mother. Mm-hmm. So being the youngest in eight kids, and I was in the kitchen when I was 5 years old learning how to cook. So all my recipes are my mom's recipes. I doctor them up a little bit. You know, I Americanize them, I could say, because, you know, it's the traditional Polynesian.
So it's like Samoan and Hawaiian
and all of that.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so and I've done...
Spam sushi?
Yeah, spam sushi.
Hey.
People like shun on that, but then when I make it,
they're
like...
No, I want some right now.
It's funny because I make it and they're like spam, and then they taste it. It's like spam. Oh, okay. Yeah. So I won the Taste of the Minnesota Vikings. There's a big food festival. I do the Taste of the NFL. They're an amazing organization. It's the number one hottest party at the Super Bowl, called the Taste of the NFL.
Okay.
And last year I was represented by Verlasso Salmon. It's a sustainable salmon, and they sponsored me, and I was able to cook for like 4,000 people. It was great. Yeah, it was an amazing experience.
How big was the kitchen?
Well, it's a ginormous kitchen, and there's chefs, like 40 chefs from around the world. Around the country that come in, and everybody has a station. So it's amazing.
Wow.
So, yeah. This year I went back to go do my show at the Pilgrim House, and my friend Ken Horgan is the owner. Their chef took another job right in the middle of summer, which is, I'm not sure if you've been to Provincetown. It's a party, like it's the vacation spot. And it's only a 3-month span, and you know, where you make your money.
Because it's on the Cape in Massachusetts,
So he walked away and he asked me if I could step in, and I did. And it's a lot of work, but it's an amazing place. It's a great restaurant. This year coming up, we're going to be opening up a new place called the Crow's Nest. And then it's going to be like a cabaret place, so I get to cook and I get to sing into that. So it's going to be fun. I get to incorporate my Polynesian food there.
In Provincetown.
Please
come. We need a road trip.
Yeah, road trip.
Yeah.
Please do. Yeah, please come do your show there. That'd be so much fun.
Well, we could go do a live show.
Yeah.
Is that an invite?
Yeah, just an invite. Yes.
All right.
Yeah, bring everybody, to tell you the truth.
Daniel's coming.
Yeah.
Barcy, Dash, Go-Go.
No, it's awesome.
We'll be there.
It's actually a fun place. You know, it's like the Pleasantville for gays.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
You know, it's like
it is. It wasn't like that when I was there. Because I lived, we had a house in Eastham.
Okay.
And I grew up in Cambridge.
Okay.
It was beautiful and very like fairy tale like.
Yeah, yeah.
But as like when I went back 10 years later, I was like, where do the women go?
I know. there aren't any women here.
There's
a great women's week.
There is a women's week.
Every week is a theme week. Like, it's so great.
It's awesome, though.
It's so cool.
Best ice cream, best food.
Best food.
Just the friendliest people.
Yeah. The friendliest people.
So much fun.
Yeah. So.
All right. We're going to do the part of the podcast that I told you about called Dear Laura.
Cool.
And I'm going to read it to you.
Awesome.
Dear Laura, I'm a Latino man, and a few years ago, I bought a house in a gated community. My daughter had a fever, so I walked a few blocks to the pharmacy and then walked back home. When I was just 3 doors away from my house, a slender yuppie type guy stopped in his tracks and said, "This is a private community." And then he proceeds to tell me that I'm not welcome and I must leave immediately or else he will have me arrested. When I shared this story with a white female acquaintance the next day, she told me that maybe I should be careful of the clothing and sunglasses that I wear. The thing that made me feel mad was not the asshole neighbor, but the woman who I don't think is racist, but didn't see anything wrong with the neighbor's actions and thought the problem was the way that I dress.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. That's, but that's what's happening around the country now, right?
He was profiled.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely profiled. Yeah.
Yeah.
And wow, but yeah, the friend, it's, I don't, a friend.
Well, he calls her an acquaintance.
Oh,
I think
acquaintance.
That's probably the,
okay.
Actually,
okay.
He does call her a friend first and then he says acquaintance. I think that she is definitely more of an acquaintance.
Yeah, I think
and not
you know,
a friend.
I can't see any of my friends doing that.
No,
but yeah, I think I would definitely be taken aback from someone, you know, if they ever said that to me. And this one's like, wait a minute, you know me.
Yeah,
you know my family, and for you to think that it was something I did something wrong. Wow, that's pretty crazy. But yeah, I think he was definitely profiled. And
do you have experience with that?
Oh my gosh.
I know you do.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, of course I had some, stuff like that, especially when I played in the NFL and driving my fancy car and getting pulled over by the cops, you know, because I had a convertible, you know, BMW, and always asking like, whose car is this? And,
stuff
like that. I mean, it happened a lot in Minnesota, and I'm sure it happens a lot everywhere else and stuff. So that definitely is real. And I definitely experienced many of that at times and stuff like that. So, but I mean, you know, it's great to sort of kind of like throw it back into their faces sometimes,
yeah.
And then you see the reaction of like, Oh, Mr. Tuolo. Oh, now I'm Mr. Tuolo.
Mm-hmm,
Now that you know who I am and stuff, you know.
So right.
For me, I don't think, people should judge anyone by their looks or anything like that. But it's the world that we live in, right?
Yeah.
It's definitely the world that we live in, and how to eliminate that is sort of by just, I think, talking about it and making sure people realize and understand and stuff that we all come from different walks of life, and that's why inclusion is very important. And that's why in NFL, that's why I'm doing that. I want to make sure that the people, the sports fan, understand who we are as a community with the LGBTQ community.
Right. So, I love that.
Yeah.
And I would say for me as a black female living in America, generalizations in general are hurtful.
Right.
And we should address everyone as an individual.
Right.
Whenever possible.
Right.
And she should have kept her mouth shut.
Exactly. She should have. But, me being Polynesian and the color of my skin, I still feel some of that. Like, I remember playing down, I'm not sure if I got it in the book, but playing down in Jacksonville the Jaguars, walking out of Blockbusters and somebody calling me the N-word.
Mm.
And I'm like, no, I'm Polynesian.
That's great.
You idiot. Like, I'm Samoan.
You got the wrong slur.
Exactly, right? Yeah. So stuff like that. I mean, but
Definitely
has, things and stuff that happen like that, you know? But then also, I get it within my own culture and within the African-American culture, right? Sometimes I'm not black enough, or sometimes I'm not dark enough, and sometimes I am. Like, you know? So either pick and choose, dude. Like, so that's the thing. It's like, you get that from all spectrums of all communities. So
absolutely.
So it's not just one. I think there's everything. Like, even with this whole police officer thing, right? The cops, I know some amazing cops that really, really do good jobs, right? And just because of one bad apple and stuff like that, it's sort of kind of like they get pegged everywhere. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, because it definitely does happen. I think but it's one of those things where I think people should, the individual, judge the individual and the things that they do instead of, everyone else. And,
I completely agree. I have two teenage sons that are mixed but present as black.
Right.
How many times has Justin been pulled over in the last, 2 months?
Too many.
Too many for different things. And the nicest encounters with the policemen, who were all white, who pulled him over, very respectful. You're a college student. Can you just take it slow? They didn't cite him for things. That's one of my biggest worries, is they go out of the house.
It's mine too, with my kids,
As
soon as they started driving, I was like,
But to
in
know.
In the snow, Minnesota.
Oh, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
I couldn't
no,
be.
No, you could.
That's a whole special thing of you living in Minnesota. But I agree. That's why I say generalizations are hurtful. You can't generalize about the police. You can't generalize about the Samoan community.
Exactly.
Or the black community.
Yeah.
or females or males.
I mean, if we're going to change this world, I think we all have to sort of kind of accept, you know, us who we truly are.
Right.
Right. I think that's the thing. Where
as individuals.
But like last week, I went to Minnesota Embracing China. Right.
Mm-hmm.
People were like, why are you doing that? Why are you doing this? It's like,
why is Minnesota embracing China?
No. It's just one of those things. They come in and they do a show, and it's one of those things.
Like a cultural thing.
Cultural thing,
okay,
you know?
Yeah.
I said, if you don't learn about other people's culture, how do you expect them to learn about yours and respect yours?
Mm.
You know? And so that's just like, if you don't know, take the time to go and learn somebody else's culture.
Yeah.
Take the time to learn about the LGBTQ, the African-American culture, the Polynesian culture, and stuff like that. Don't just see what you're on,
on
the computer, right?
Absolutely.
So that's why I went. I went because it's a beautiful culture, and I have so many Asian friends, and I just love how they're keeping it very pure and very their culture very nice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the thing. You know, it's like the Polynesian. You come to Samoa, you see the dancing, you see the war dancing, you see
the
whole island, mm-hmm. you see all of that. You know, so it's not just seeing one thing, you see everything. You know?
I'm trying to say Samoa like
Samoa.
You.
Samoa.
We talked a little bit about what's next for you. Is there anything that we didn't discuss that's coming up for you that you want people to know about?
Yes. Well, the thing I want people to know, if you're down in Miami for the Super Bowl, please come to the inclusion party.
He's inviting us. Huh?
Yeah, we're inviting you guys. It's so much. It's going to be so much fun. It's a part of inclusion, and it's a way for people to come and celebrate. And right now we are. You can just jump on my website, hateiswrong.
Okay. .org,
and
that'll be in the show notes too.
Yeah, it's hateiswrong. And just for the follow-ups on the party, we're still, tying up some loose ends and stuff like that. But it's going to be an amazing time. Other than that, be kind to one another. Make sure you love your parents and mm-hmm. your children. And, I don't know. For me and stuff, I try to, I always try to say hello to a stranger.
Oh,
yeah.
You
see the
that.
Reaction on their faces, and sometimes it's like,
I'm sure with you it's
stranger
different
danger.
With me.
Stranger danger.
Stranger
That's
danger.
The second time I've heard that this week.
Stranger danger is like, oh, hi. But then when I throw in the aloha thing, like, oh Hawaii.
Whenever I say hi to people, Laura's like, honey.
Now I'm just going to say,
well, Sarah said I could do that.
Yeah, exactly.
And then where can people find you on social media?
Social media. So it's at Sarah Tuaolo on Instagram and on Facebook as well.
Yeah. Are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. It's the same thing, at Sarah Tuaolo. So Sarah Tuaolo.
Yeah, don't forget that other O. I did that.
I know.
And it came out different. So make sure you put that in. And then before we close, I told you I was going to get back to you about some Luther.
Oh!
So
can you,
please?
Okay. We'll try something.
Everybody, turn down your levels on your headphones.
Down some.
Back up a little bit. So this is one of the songs that I did for, it wasn't, Luther sang it, but it was also, it was by the Carpenters.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. Yay. Okay.
So I'm going to sing this Acapulco. They won't sound the same, but it's like, no. Long ago, and also far away, I fell in love with you. Before the second show, and your guitar, and you sound so sweet and clear, but you're not really here, it's just the radio. And don't you remember you told me you loved me, baby? You said you'd be coming back this way again. And baby, 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 oh, baby, I love you. And I really do.
Woo!
Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Did you put some reverb on that?
Daniel will. Thank you.
Thank you. This was amazing. Thank you so much.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And stay tuned for our bonus after show, Scott Talks, coming up next.
dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.